Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Tight Fit is a British band whose lineup includes Denise Waterman, Steve Grant, and Julie Harris. The band shot to fame in 1982 with the song The Lion Sleeps Tonight. Other chart hits include Fantasy Island and Secret Heart. During the band's hiatus, Steve Grant returned to his roots in musical theatre, appearing in a number of musicals such as Miss Saigon in the West End, before losing most of his sight, which led to a focus on recording studio work instead. Julie Harris became a professionally qualified chef and was in a number of successful bands such as Julie and the Gems, as well as performing lead vocals with the Back to the 80s band. Denise Waterman was married to Pete Waterman and had a band with her two brothers following Tight Fit. She works as a TV presenter, actor, and professional entertainer. The band reformed in 2010 and performs live up and down the UK and in Europe. In 2016, the band's second album, Tight Fit Together, was released. In 2021, the band teamed up with Energize Records, the acclaimed British independent record label that specializes in up-tempo dance music, to create new singles and albums. All of the latest releases have had successful chart placings on the Heritage Chart, the iTunes and Amazon Music download charts. Singles include Fallout, Holding On To You, and Waiting for the Rain. Up next on Celeb Savant, we have got Denise Waterman and Steve Grant from Tight Fit.
Denise, first, where are you in the world and how are you doing?
I am in Wandsworth in London and I am very good. I became a grandmother 3 weeks ago.
Oh, congratulations. Amazing. And Steve, where are you and how are you doing?
I live about half an hour walk from Denise, and I'm in Fulham in Southwest London, and I'm good. Yeah, all really good.
Denise first. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be in this creative, this world. And how did that journey progress? And then meeting the guys from Tight Fit.
I'm afraid I'm a bit of an odd one because my mum and dad were performers. So I went to school at the age of 7. So I've never known anything different. I suppose if my parents had been librarians, my life may have took a different line.
Yes.
However, I was born in a trunk and spent my life surrounded by them performing. My brothers are also performers. So at the age of 15, I went away for 4 months to do a summer season as a dancer. I was in Jersey, which is one of the islands not far from England. And it's been a high kick, sing a song, act of it ever since. And I met the others at an audition in central London. We all had the same agent. Never met them before, even though we're all in the same industry. So we were all around 1920 at the time. And we spent a day.
Year 1920.
We were 19 and 20 yeah. years old at the time. There was an audition room with about 40 people. 15 guys, 25 girls. And throughout the day, they were like checking people to see who matched and who would work. We had to sing, dance and chat. And by the end of the day, they decided that the right people for Tight Fit were Steve, Julie and myself. And had they not picked Steve, at the end of that day, there were only 2 boys left, 4 girls and 2 boys to choose from. And Julie and I were the 2 girls. And we were waiting with bated breath to see who the guy would be. And had it not been the lovely Steve, it would have been my brother had to get sent out of the room because he didn't get it. And I did. And Steve was the lead male doing The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
So Steve, let's head to your journey as a child and then moving into the space with Tight Fit.
I grew up in a very kind of working class background, and My dad kind of sang in a local amateur group performing, but His job was like as a carpenter. Mum was a housewife, so nobody in my family worked on the stage professionally. But my dad would love to have done it, but he had a family to raise and stuff, so I had to get a proper job. And I had two friends that went to the local stage school and did ballroom dancing. And I asked my mum that I wanted to go with them, and I was about 9, I think, something like that. And I did my first, I think it was a cha-cha exam. I got like a really high score. And then the owner of the school invited my parents to come in and said he needs to come back and do tap and dancing and singing and everything. And my parents weren't very well off, so they couldn't really afford me to go to the school every day, because the school wanted me to go every night after my daytime school. And so they gave me free lessons every day apart from one class, which my parents just paid for one class a week. But I went every single day of the week, and I absolutely loved it. So I was very lucky. I had this very nice school that were very philanthropic and helped me, you know, because we weren't like poor, but we were just not well off, you know. So yeah, so I went to stage school, and then from there I went to Rombert School in London, and I did kind of contemporary dance and classical dance and joined a dance company. But then I realized I really wanted to do a bit of everything and more acting. I left the dance company, and then I started going to auditions, and I did my first musical in the West End in 1981, which was the Broadway version of Bethel Little House in Texas Came to London. And I did that show at Drury Lane. And so my kind of singing career started at that stage, when I was like 20, 21. And then after that is when we had the audition for the group. And that's when Denise and I, although we all, like Denise said, we all had the same agent. We had worked in different areas, and so we hadn't worked together, but we, you know, that was such a long time ago. Like Denise said, she just had her first grandchild. So we've known each other for a long time.
What's 43 years between friends, Steve?
So Steve, quoting Craig Revel Horvath, instead of saying, your first cha-cha exam, you should have said cha-cha-cha exam.
Cha-cha-cha. Yeah. And funny you should say that, because I know Craig. I worked with him. He was the dance captain at Miss Saigon. The last musical I did in London was Miss Saigon. And he was the dance captain of the show. And he actually auditioned me. He was part of the audition panel for the show. So I bump into him now and then. But darling, he's off the scale now.
So how did the name Denise Tightfoot come from? How was that name chosen?
Oh, it was the record company. You know, you've got to remember, way back then, the record company were in charge of everything, from the name of the group, who was in the group, how often we worked, how much we got paid. We were mere puppets within that system, and we didn't have any say in anything. So I'm afraid it's not our fault, or if it's not a bad thing, it is our fault if it's not a bad thing. But the record company chose it all.
They owned the name, but they also owned everything. They managed us. We were contracted to them. So yeah, we had a very fractious relationship with the record company. But you know, I guess they gave us that opportunity. So
pros and cons of both. We had this experience and journey of collaborating and releasing in the 80s. Denise, first, so you took a hiatus during the break. And now, what did you get up to during that period of time?
In between? Oh, yes. My goodness. I only ever wanted to be a television presenter, but it took until I was 34 to become a television presenter. So obviously, in the business that we're in, you take what comes your way. So I was an actress. I sang in the club in London, which in itself, being the only singer in a show, was miraculous, believe me. I had to dance in the show, and there were some seriously good dancers in it. And, you know, I've spent my life bluffing, and no one's noticed yet, so I'm not going to tell them. The only thing that I was actually confident with, really, if I'm being totally honest, is talking in front of people, presenting, hosting, all of that kind of stuff. So I ended up becoming a professional presenter at the age of 34. By then, I'd had two children of my own, and I was married to the one and only Peter Waterman of Stock Aitken Waterman,
yes,
who is father of our children. I may add, I since divorced him 20 years ago. Great guy, but I was his third wife. And all I'll say is there's a common denominator, and it's not the women. No, he's just not the kind of guy that ever should have got married. And you think he'd have learnt after the first one. But no, he decided to take three versions in order to find out whether that was the case. Eventually, Julie was singing with a group, and the other girl that was in the group she was working with, it was a live band group, left, and she contacted me and said, would you like to join? Of which I nearly spat my coffee out. I said, sorry? She said, oh, yeah, we need somebody to be the other woman. So would you like to come and do that? So by the time I joined her little group, the 80s was really, really popular again. So we were talking and we said, well, why don't we get Steve involved? Because the 80s is like so fashionable now. So we contacted Steve, and he probably spat his coffee out as well when we...
Yeah, I nearly choked on my biscuits.
Yeah. Fancy doing it all again. And we got together, and it's been a real experience. Only this time round, we're pulling our own strings. We haven't got somebody using us as a puppet. So it's been really great fun doing it on our terms. And, you know, to have got to the point now where we've got a brand new album with all new songs, I'll leave Steve to discuss that bit, is just phenomenal. And if you'd have asked us 43 years ago, what do you think you'll be doing in 43 years' time, young lady? We definitely would not have said, back together, releasing an album.
So, Steve, before heading back to you, Denise, you mentioned that you were bluffing through things a lot. Over a period of time, when you were doing those elements for longer periods, obviously you got in and was like, oh, I'm not quite sure what I'm doing. But as you carried miles of those different tasks, did you ever feel more confident as you got more skilled in them?
It wasn't that I wasn't confident. I had all the confidence in the world.
Yes.
I just knew that other people were better than me. But I wasn't ever going to let the people that were picking realized that. So I would always stand at the front of an audition with all the confidence in the world. Only I knew what I was better at, if you like, and where my heart was. And that was as a presenter. That's what I always wanted to be. But along the way, I was a Benny Hill girl. I was a Kenny Everett bit of stuff. If I'd only gone for the presenting, I wouldn't have had such an interesting journey. If I never did another job tomorrow, do you know what? I've already had too much fun.
That's cool. Okay, Steve, what did you get up to through the hiatus and then leading into the album that Denise referenced?
Yeah, so like Denise said, you know, we all went off and did our own things. Julie had her band. I went back to doing what I'd been doing originally. But immediately after Tight Fit, I had a couple of record deals with other labels. I had a deal with Rocket Records, with Elton's label, and then another small label. But then it came to a point where I thought I need to go back to what I was doing before. And so I started auditioning for shows. And I think the first show that I did was a tour of Kiss Me Kate's with Kate O'Mara, which was great fun. I enjoyed it. And then I kind of just got back into the groove of doing shows again. And like I said, the last show that I did was the original production of Miss Saigon at Drury Lane. And I was in and out of that show for quite a long time. And then I started having some issues with my sight.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I left Miss Saigon, I had like a lot of eye operations. I had something called CMV retinitis, and it caused the gradual loss of a lot of my vision. So I stopped doing theatre because of that. And then, like Denise said, I had the call from the girl saying, would you like to come and do some gigs with us? And I thought, this is perfect, because I don't need to, there's no choreography. I don't need to hit a mark at a certain time. I'm in a show. I can just be on stage and do what I want to do. And this would fit in perfectly with me. So yeah, I went back to the group, and we're at this point now where we've signed the deal and we've got this album out. And Energized Records, the label that we're with, is just a very small dance label, but they've been so nice to us, and they've given us these amazing tracks. They've got a combination of writers that they work with, and they sent us 5 tracks, and we played these songs, the 3 of us, and just said, wow, how amazing to get this opportunity at this age and this stage of our careers. And so we just jumped at the chance, you know, and we've had number ones on the Heritage chart. And when the album came out, it went into the iTunes dance chart at number one. Considering we haven't had a hit for 43 years, that was just amazing. So it's been lovely to be doing this at this stage. You know, we've got an album now that we're very proud of. And there's another single coming out. And this part of the journey of Tightfit has been so much more enjoyable than it was in parts originally, mainly because of the label. But working with Energize has been an absolute joy. They've been so lovely.
I defy anyone who doesn't know who Tightfit is and hears the album, which is called Forever, by the way, in case anyone's interested. I defy anyone to realize how old we really are, because Steve's voice is still as amazing as it was way back when. Mm-hmm. And what they've done production-wise on the records, we all sound like teenagers. We're very happy.
Well, absolutely. For me, age is just a number.
Absolutely.
Yes. I hear a lot of people say in my network or around me, like, oh, they can't do this anymore because they're this age, or they can't do this. And I always say to them, you know what? You're as old as you want to be. Body and mind and everything permitting, naturally.
I mean, we probably don't show as much flesh as we used to when we were younger, but well, apart from when Denise rips my top off halfway through. So
hang on, Steve, you still show as much flesh as you, apart from you show your top half, but that's because you're in blinking great shape. You go to the gym every single day and you eat lots of potato. You told us.
Yes. Mr. Potato Head.
Us women, we've covered up a little bit, but we still have an element of sexuality, even at our age.
Why not?
So, Denise, to you first, besides the record label's differences, your observations of the difference between releasing music at that time in the 80s and now?
Well, I think the biggest difference is that anyone, anywhere, can make a record at their home these days with all the equipment that they can just, you know, create music. They don't even need musicians these days. Whereas way back then, it was much more difficult to try and put music out. But nowadays, you know, complete nobodies can suddenly use the social media to become super famous, it seems like, overnight, just by creating something at home. You couldn't do that back then. You had to have the support of a record company, which is why we were, you know, became the puppets, I suppose. Yep.
Steve, anything to add?
I would just say, no, the fact that you can create music now and the fact that it's so accessible, you know, this album came out and anybody worldwide can download it and listen to it, which makes it a lot more accessible now and easier for people to find music and get it. But at the same time, the artists don't get the revenue from their tracks that they used to get. So that's a big change. You know, there's a fight to get more money from downloads, because it's something like 0.01 penny per stream. So the money coming back is not as good. But at the same time, you can get a far bigger audience because you can get, you know, worldwide. It doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can find that music and download it. So that's a big change. But also, you know, we can make music here, send our vocals off to a producer somewhere, you know, in South America, and they can do a mix for us and send it back. And that's, you know, that's an incredible way of working with people and reaching out to people that you would possibly never have had the chance to work with in the past. We've got a guy called Jose Jimenez who does mixes for us. He's in Venezuela. It's changed so much now to how it was back in the 80s. It's very, very different.
So it's interesting, and you've referenced the streaming, so I'm not sure if you guys are aware. So for me, I love me a CD. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, the experience of listening to song once, whatever number. For me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to you guys for all the hard work you do. Now, again, I'm not sure if you are aware, physical is a massive comeback around the world. Last year, 5.9 million vinyls sold in the UK, the biggest since 1990. There's also a basket of products in the UK where they gauge exchanges on. There's certain needs to be a certain amount of exchanges happening daily for a product to be in this basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs, CDs have now been put back in that basket. And the research is actually showing that it's the teenagers, the younger people that are diving into these worlds and not the older nostalgic people. So, and you've mentioned there's streaming and the low pay. So understanding or knowing about these little observations, Denise, what are your thoughts around that?
Well, that's great news if the young people are buying CDs again. I mean, I got handed some CDs the other day. And I was thinking, I haven't got a CD player. So presumably these young people have bought CD players, or is there some other way of playing a CD? Because even my laptop, you know, used to have a CD player on it or a DVD player on it, hasn't got that anymore. So it looks like I'm going to have to buy one.
This album is available on CD as well. So people can go to energizerecords.com and they can order the CD from there. And also, it's available on vinyl. I think it's the vinyl version has taken a bit longer to manufacture, but the vinyl will be released, I think, in about 3 or 4 weeks' time.
Oh, cool.
So we're doing everything with it because our label likes to do physical copies as well. So, yeah, and I love that as well, yeah.
So it's interesting, Denise, because I was actually living overseas in Israel, the UK, and then I came back to South Africa. And about a year and a half ago, I wanted to get a CD player for my CDs. And everyone was saying to me, no, there's no ways you can get CD players anymore. They don't exist. And in South Africa, there's a platform called Takealot, which is sort of similar to Amazon, but different. And I went on there hoping for a couple of great choices. And there were 50 to 100 different options of CD players. And I was shocked. And I had to narrow it down and narrow it down again. I got my CD player, and the sound quality on the CD player compared to the digital DSPs, it's amazing the difference.
Because I had a really good one. I hadn't used it for a while, and I got rid of it. I really wish that I kept it now because, we've got a CD, like I said, and I am, like Denise, I haven't got anything I can play it on. I have a look online.
Steve, maybe Father Christmas will buy you one.
So you've mentioned the vinyl, the album coming out shortly. What's happening the rest of over the next few months?
The new single is out in a few weeks' time. It's called Waiting for the Rain, another fabulous track. And we're not just saying that when we say it. Even if it wasn't us singing them, the songs by themselves are standalone brilliant songs. But, you know, the creative team behind the mixing, the production, the record company, they've really brought them to life. And there's a real variety of songs on the album. So it's definitely worth going out or sending off for the Forever, the album. We are looking to take on a new manager. So hopefully, when all of that is in place, we will be popping up around the UK at a place near you. Maybe we'll end up back in South Africa.
Cool. I'll be cheering you on. I love that. I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 years, 10 hours, 5 minutes, I know your answers will be different every time. I recognize that and I understand that.
Wow.
I'm saying top of mind. I'm not saying favorite. Steve, if you had to push play to five other artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be and what songs would you pick if you can think of specific songs?
You sprung this on me. Okay. Well, thanks, Barrett. So definitely it will be ABBA and Winner Takes It All. And then I think I'd say Alison Moye, All Cried Out, and Donna Summer. This time I know it's for real. David Bowie, Fashion, and I love CC Peniston, Finally.
Okay, a lovely mix, lovely mix. Denise, your turn.
I also would go with ABBA, but I would probably take the song, I can't remember what it's called, I Don't Want to Talk, from the ABBA, from the film.
Yes, I know which one you're talking about. The slow song.
Yeah, the slow song.
Yes.
And then I would take Eva Cassidy, Over the Rainbow. I would take Steps, One for Sorrow, Two for Joy, whatever that song is. I would also take Donna Summer with This Time I Know It's for Real. And tribute to my ex, I Love Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley.
Cool, nice mixes. Steve, first, why do you feel the 80s, the 90s, you have these festivals with all these artists and there's such a nostalgia for this time and the music and is flowing back even for the younger people? Why do you feel that that is happening at this time?
You know what, Barrett? I think it's because music is one of the few things that can take you or transport you back in time to a place in a time and place in your life. Just hearing a piece of music can immediately transport you to that spot. If you were happy and that was a good memory for you, then it's so nice to relive that memory again. And so I think that's why the 80s and 90s are so popular right now, because, you know, people love to go to those events and dress up. People come to gigs, they've got the big shoulder pads on, and rah-rah skirts. Oh, that's just the guys. It's people come along to have fun and party and enjoy themselves.
Now, I also think that the younger people realize that the songs in the 80s and 90s were great, fun songs with lyrics. A lot of the music these days is slightly more kind of, I don't know what you, not techno, but it just hasn't got the quality of the songs of the 80s and the 90s. Mm. And maybe they heard the songs through their parents, so they may have grown up with them, you know, not realizing that that's been instilled in them.
Yeah.
And when they got this opportunity to enjoy the 80s and the 90s, they're taking the opportunity to go to festivals and enjoy the fabulous music.
So, Denise, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Apart from, I'd like to say, go out now and order the Forever Tight Fit album. Apart from that, I'd like to say, enjoy every moment of your life. You don't know how long you're here for. Make the most of it. Smile and the world smiles with you.
Steve, anything to add?
I would just like to say the same thing and just say to you, Barrett, thanks for having us on for your show, because it's been a real joy speaking to you. And yeah, just make it count. Make every moment count. Enjoy it, because it passes by so quickly. Enjoy your life.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.